The current spoiler warning level is Sapphire.
Friends and folks, for this episode, you're looking at a spoiler warning level of Sapphire. We're talking about Mobile Suit Victory Gundam because we have a very special guest whose work is surrounding Victory Gundam. So naturally, how could we do it any other way? That means if you are caught up on the Great Gundam Project or even a few seasons behind, you are good to go. There will be no spoilers for you. Please enjoy the episode. Hello, friends and folks, and welcome back to Mechanista NG. We're the hangar of your Gundam. This one didn't work. I'm not happy with this.
Where were you going with that?
Sometimes it's not about where you're going. It's about the dust. I'm Six Dalmar from Scanline Media.
I'm Dylan. I'm Robots.
Hi, Robots. We're joined by a special guest. The one who stood up to the victory and lived to tell the tale.
Hi, I'm Cyberbilly. You might know me from the Grand Point Press, where I am currently translating Tamino's victory novel adaptations.
How's that going?
It's going pretty well. We just finished book one at the late November. Currently, we are about to release the first prologue of book two. Actually, later today.
All right, oh, excellent.
Nice. Which
not later today as we record this.
Yes, yeah, that is correct.
I was about to say, so that means by the time this comes out, you all can find that.
Well, yeah, we'll have a link down in the show notes. There'll be a quick little clicky click to go check that out. But as you are the victory fan, sure, victory fan,
it's
number
victory
one.
Stan. It's got the rhyme.
Victory Dan. We're going to roll in our very late UC chart, and if we roll something from F91, we're going to roll again. So let's get right into it. I know what I want, but I'm not gonna say it. I'm just gonna hope it happens.
I'm gonna believe in the heart of the dice.
Hey, Dylan.
What is it?
It is the XMA-01 Rafflesia.
No, we can't do this again. We'll lose it again. No,
it's F91, so I gotta roll again.
Yeah.
That's the lost episode.
Oh no. The lost episode.
It's
a sign. I'm tapping over. Yes, I do have a waveform. Okay. It just made me paranoid
because
that's what happened last time.
Yeah. For those that don't know.
Okay. Let's finish the story. Yeah. But hopefully we will not lose the ZMT S12G Shoku.
Ooh. Yo! This is a good one to talk about. Okay. I like the Shoku, so.
Boy.
All right. So, the ZMT S12G Shoku. This is the first mobile suit I think we get to see in Victory, right? I think we see it before anything else.
Yeah, because the opening is Chronicle pursuing Uso, with Chronicle and the Zolo trying to recapture it.
Yep. So the Shoku though is a Zanskara mobile suit. Buggy friend. And it is a pretty good example of all the technologies you will see in Victory, I feel. Like, just in terms of, like, everything it has going on. It's a really, really cool looking design. Even though it is a Zanskara design, I do feel like it's almost like Zanskara making a Gundam, though, because, like, it's got elements of the Gundam. You look at the face and it has, like, you know, the red chin sticking out and stuff like that, as well as, like, the separated faceplate from, like, a head armor. But, I mean, that's about where the similarities end. And I guess you can analog the two antenna into, like, a V-fin.
Yeah, it's V-fin-esque.
Now, of course, that's where the similarities end, though, and then you look at the rest of it, and it's like, oh, this is just a weird buggy boy. It lacks skirt armor in a traditional sense. Like, you don't have front skirt armor, and that's something that comes up on a couple of Ishigaki's designs, especially in, like, Victory and stuff. We actually just recently had a big talk about that, I believe, in the Abnormal Mapping Discord. Yeah. Another thing that this has going on that's really cool is I love the asymmetry with the one shoulder being like really pointed out and the other just being open. Oh, should note, whole suit pretty much just yellow, like a very orangey yellow.
It's just orange. I don't think you can say yellow.
That's like.
The shaded parts to me are the more orangey part. And
that's
the,
like,
this is
it's like macaroni colored.
Fine. The Kraft mac and cheese colored Shoukyu.
Now no artificial ingredients.
I prefer the Annie's Shoukyu. It's organic.
It has a lot of, you know, little gray details going on, things like the joints, the feet, the like the beam shield on the arm, various verniers, etc. You've got, so like I mentioned with the head, you've got the faceplate that's very Gundam-like, you've got these two antenna almost invoking like a V-fin-like feel. You have really cool eyes, and something, if you haven't seen the show, the way the Zanskar suit eyes tend to work is they have a slit going down horizontally through them, and they appear to just be like closed and black. However, they open up, and they are usually red. When full open, they tend to look like bug eyes, and they will also occasionally do like what like the Hyakushiki and a couple other suits do, where it has like a weird scanny kind of thing going on with it. Really, really cool looking eyes, though.
Yeah, that effect is so cool.
It feels like a really, like, this is one of the things about Victory, right? Is it feels like they took some of the ideas of original Gundam's design and actually tried to iterate them on a way that, like, you know, I'm not going to, like, spoil too much, but, like, you talk about, like, suits from Unicorn and stuff, and it's like, it doesn't really feel like this is that much of an evolution. Like, you know, it clearly is new art and they do new things, but it doesn't feel like there's this clever rediscovery and consideration of the basic principles. Whereas you've got stuff like the Shoku's eyes, like these Zanskar eyes that feel like they are the core, like the emotional heart of the Mono Eye reimagined in a way that I think is genius.
Yeah, it does a really good job of evoking like the aesthetics of it and paying homage with that while still doing its own thing, which is sick as shit.
Yeah, like that's kind of the main thing, right? Like a lot of earlier UC is so stuck in the paradigm of suits between like just doing either Zeon suits or Federation style suits that they don't really experiment as much as you would like. At least, like, for a lot of early UC. Even when the factions involved might not even be, like, directly Zeon-related, they'll, you know, you get things like the new Decides in, or the Titans themselves, actually, or the new Decides, which are the Titan Remnants, all using, you know, Zeon motifs on their suits. You don't get a lot of, like, unique new motifs going on, whereas I feel like both F-91... with, like, all the gas mask faces on the Crossbone Vanguard suits, which have their own weird eye thing going on, and then, like, all the Zanskar suits, you get a really nice shift in, like, what... Like, you get a really nice evolution in mobile suit design that you don't really see in earlier things, even though, like Six said, you may get new and fancy art, and they might be doing new roles, but generally speaking, mobile suit design is very... samey? Not necessarily in a bad way, even. It's just, that's what Sunrise, like, kind of decided for that era. That's why you've got Hajime Katoki, you know, reimagining everything and trying to make it all in line with looking, you know, similar to one another.
And that's part of the joy of like victory, right? Is seeing these really like, no, these really are different designs, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. And hell, the victory even possesses something that's an evolution from F91. So the thing I was going to bring up is, so you look at the beam shield on the arm and you go, oh, look, it's a beam shield. But it's not really just a beam shield. It's, I think on our show, the first time this has come up, it's a beam rotor.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, basically, it emits a bunch of beam sabers, and then they spin really fast. Which basically lets it achieve lift. It's supposed to be using the same principle behind like Minovsky craft systems.
Yeah, the book goes into a little more depth on it, that it emits the particles to generate like artificial downward force or like upward force to create lift. Mm. There's a lot of philosophizing about it, how that the beam rotor is sort of the first way to make mobile suits genuinely practical, that you know, you're not limited by propellant in the same ways. You can actually deploy things over long areas without having to have them come back. So it's a very, like, Uso gets very excited about it.
Mm-hmm. I would expect he would. He is a bit of a nerd about mobile suits, so makes sense. The thing is also, so, you know, it uses a similar to Minovsky craft-like system. You know, this is something that normally only existed before on, like, basically ships. You know, it's the explanation for why the white base being shaped as it is still able to fly on Earth, is basically just generating, you know, this downward force, like through other means that aren't just rocket propulsion and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so the Shokyu has them, and they look very silly in practice, but they're kind of rad. It's one of those things where, like, The beam rotors are always something I see made fun of, you know, with, like, Victory, because there's a lot of people who kind of have very weird feelings about Victory, especially people who haven't seen it and basically only know it through memes, and it's kind of one of the ones that comes up is the beam rotors. The thing is, when you're approaching a giant robot show, regardless of what silly things are going on in it, the thing is, giant robots themselves are silly. You gotta maybe give them a chance, and that's when you start realizing things are cool. The beam rotors are cool to me. It's just one of those things I think about a lot, because I know I've seen, like, you know, Gundam fandom have a lot of varied reactions to the idea of, like, beam rotors and how they work. Because they just assume, oh, it's like a helicopter blade but made of beam. That's stupid. But that's... there's more to it than that. Because that's how all giant robots...
That is also kind of true. And, like, I get, like, it doesn't feel that glamorous. It's honestly when you, I think that's part of, Billy, you mentioned, like, the, like, Uso getting excited and going into the technical details in the novel. And I think, honestly, that's where it shines, is when you're like, yeah, but you don't need, you know, like, extra propellant tanks. And, like, yeah, but, like, you can fly perfectly level on, like, in atmosphere, right? Mm-hmm. Like, which you have all these problems with Gundams having to do, like, these, like, you know, hop attacks and stuff. And it's just like, no, this thing can just sort of go. Like, it's not, I don't think it's particularly glamorous. And certainly I think, like, a lot of robot design enthusiasts go for glamour. But it is preeminently practical.
There's another really cool element about, especially a lot of the early Zanskare suits, that doesn't really get remarked upon in the show, but the fact is that Zanskare led their Earth invasion with their testing team, which, you know, one is, like, kind of one of the first in-show explanations we've ever had for a new mobile suit every week, mm-hmm. because, like, they come to Earth with the Zolo. The Zolo sucks. It is tough to combine, because you have to do it at high speeds. It has to be at high altitude. If there are Minovsky particles you're stuck in your top terminal and bottom terminal. You're stuck in the helicopter. So something like the Shokyu is, you know, it's them trying to quickly refine all the things that they've learned into a effective combat machine. I'm here for the beam rotors. Buy in.
Yeah, and like, it's the Shokyu just such a cool suit for when it appears and everything. Like, I know that, like, you know, you had the whole thing with the early episodes of Victory where they were like, no, we have to show a Gundam. What is this? But I like the idea of the Shoukyu as being, like, one of the earliest things that, you know, Uso gets to mess around in, because it's just a cool machine. Trying to think. So also with it, like, you hit the torso area, right? And the torso is, I actually like this design. It's got a very prominent cockpit area, like, you know, a lot of mobile suits tend to have, but I like this weird, like, bubble, I guess you would describe it as, going on in the middle of the chest there. Just think it's a cool shape that you don't really, you know, it's different enough from, like, a lot of other, you know, Gundam type things.
That it makes you think there should be, like, a beam cannon or something in there. There isn't.
Nope. It's just a weird cockpit hatch.
I like the shape of it. Like, it you know, we obviously see it eject pretty early on in the first episode, but, like, to me, it really screams that, like, this is a test thing. We got to make sure the pilot can get out alive, just in case.
Mm-hmm. Just having an actual, like, quick, easy cockpit to get out of.
Mm-hmm. Or into, as the case may be.
Or into, yes. I do like the subtle little cables also going up into the chest there. You can see right below. Mainly just because I always like cables on the suits. They're always good. I mentioned, like, the skirt armor is very, like, it's integrated into the thigh. And this happens on a couple of Ishigaki's designs where, rather than just doing skirt armor, he just integrates it into the thigh. Or, like, will have armor on the upper thigh.
Yeah, not really a skirt so much as it is Daisy Dukes.
yeah, it kind of is, yeah. Fucking big feet. I don't know why the Shoukyu just looks like it has just gigantic feet in the art, but even, like, looking at it in the show, just very large feet on this mobile suit. Very in simple design to them, again, just these large, like, black heels that it has going on. The shoulders, as I mentioned, are really neat. One, for the asymmetry, too, because they have different functions going on with them. The pointier shoulder has a little beam gun inside of it. A twin beam gun, actually. Which can actually be, like, rotated around and fired every which way. We see that get used pretty immediately also. Which is also really cool. I just like this weird little omnidirectional beam cannon. You've got is the other shoulder just, I think that's just
the other vernier, one's just, like, right? A huge vernier, I think.
Yeah, it's just a big vernier on the one side. And then simple, like, very simple arms, nothing too special going on there other than the beam rudder, which we mentioned. Another thing is it actually has a very understated backpack as well. It's very honestly, the thing about the Shoukyu, and this kind of this, it doesn't feel like you're looking at a mobile suit that has a bunch of things attached to it, really. Mm-hmm. Everything kind of integrates really well. Like, a lot of mobile suit backpacks, you can kind of just separate from the mobile suit in a way that it's like, you know, this looks like a clearly separate component. This is integrated into the torso very, like, smoothly, I would say. So the Shoukyu has this very streamlined look because of this. Because everything just looks like it kind of is all one thing. It doesn't look like an amalgam of parts in the same way most mobile suits do. Just a lot of cool integration like that, which I tend to like. And again, I know this isn't Dunbine. I will say I love bug robots, though. And if anyone follows me on Twitter, they've seen me talk about Aura Battlers to see why enough of that. But the thing is, a lot of the Zanskare suits, I mean, you know, Vespa being the company, or the group, I guess you would say, you know, they have very bug-like looks to them, and I love that. good friends. And then, like, it's other equipment, you know, it's got a beam saber. Everything has a beam saber. It has a beam rifle, pretty standard beam rifle. That's about it.
I mean, we see it use a Gatling gun. That's not standard issue for the Shoukyu, but
yes,
that
is true.
Right, that's the one that usually gets shown also with, like, the Victory Gundam, I believe. Which is cool. Gatlings are cool. You know, the whole thing being, at least the way I've always seen it described is mobile suits being smaller means the armor is inherently thinner, which means, oh, physical weapons are back in vogue again.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can actually, you know, pierce the armor. The whole thing is, you know, the shift towards beam weapons was, oh, we're in these large mobile suits, but small arms fire and, like, you know, physical ammo doesn't really break through it that easily, unless it's like a bazooka or something. And then by the time you're hitting, like, F-91 in Victory, you're getting mobile suits that are much smaller and much faster. Well, beam rifles are harder to directly hit with. Oh, wait a minute, what if I just have a machine gun now that they are smaller and have less armor? Kind of funny how that works out that way.
Probably should have put Vulcans on this thing, then.
Yeah, that's true. You could have put Vulcans on it.
You could put Vulcans on anything, though. I think it's special for not having them.
That's fair.
Well, you're going to think it's special right up to the point where you're fighting a helicopter and you're like, damn it.
Anything else for the ship from either of you? Like, any special nods in the novel about it?
The one of the things that was most striking was almost the total absence of description of it.
Really?
There is, yeah, it like, I kept waiting for it, and it's one of those things where I'm just like, this like, at times it's like, is Tomino's heart really in this for the mecha? And I know that on some level it has to be, but like, it like, there's like, it talks about how it has eyes and the backpack. There's a scene where like the count teaches Uso about ideology as they're kind of crawling all over it and talking about it. But there, it really just never really remarks about it in any aesthetic sense. It like, Uso bumps against the plate as he's paragliding. It's kind of a big kind of, you know, question mark as far, you know, if you don't have any of the show. That was one of the things as my wife was doing some of the editing for it, for the book. Like, I had to show her my Gunpla to give her any sort of visual understanding of what this thing was actually supposed to be like.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. I still need to read those chapters. I still have all the original chapters you sent me because I saved them, and then, much like everything else I save, I'm so delayed on reading them.
It's an ebook. It's an ebook now, man. I've got it all compiled. It's you got a much better editing job than that first pass. It's good. I'll save that for the end.
I'll have to read it.
I will say, I think, like, to me, the show, I think it's a bummer, like, not just in the novel, but in the show, I would have loved to see the Shoku get to do more stuff. I really like this design, and it kind of goes away pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I think it's we get a little bit of a moment in the show of the beam rotor being used as a weapon, as a melee weapon, and I think that's sick. I would have loved to see more of that. And I just, there's something about this design where you mentioned, like, I mean, even compared to other Victory designs, it's just the way everything is integrated. It feels like it was built, like, this was built as a whole machine. They knew from the start what they were building, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It feels very much like a prototype. And the thing is, I mean, we can kind of segue into the mass production version of it, the Rig Shoku, because the Rig Shoku kind of doesn't have that same feel. The Rig Shoku goes back to being more, I mean, it's got a lot of elements from the original Shoku, obviously. However, you know, between, like, the shoulders being more symmetrical and normal, the backpack being its own separate piece, it feels a bit more standard. It feels a little less experimental, just from a couple of little things like that, like with the silhouette and such going on with it. Still cool, mind you, it's just not as cool.
I will agree with you that the Rig Shoku is not as cool, what I like is the Rig Shoku for the Imperial Guard. That one does it for me.
Yes, that's fair. And we'll get to that one in a moment. First, we'll talk about just the Rig Shoku, I think. So the Rig Shoku is the mass production version of the Shoku. It is meant to, you know, like the original Shoku, as we mentioned, experimental. It's very much a prototype. It's probably why we don't really see it again, even, just because it's just, there was just the one, you know, maybe a couple other production units, but we didn't get to see them.
Yeah, and it was technically owned by a 13-year-old boy in a paraglider, so maybe you do send that one back to the shop after that.
Yeah, that is true. So then you get the rickshaw queue. The rickshaw queues, one of the more prominent things is adds a lot more color. You get a dark green added to the palette, as well as very 90s teal. Like, this particular shade of teal, I actually don't like, and it comes up on a couple of victory suits.
This looks bad.
The teal is very, like, I don't know how else to describe it. It's a color that makes me think of the 90s, but, like, in, like, not a good way.
I like it shaded. I like it in that. I like it in these shaded concept shots, but when it's just on its own, like, on the rear shot on the Gundam Wiki, it's not great.
Yeah.
It looks like the green of, like, white and green toothpaste.
Yeah.
It's bad.
So, it still has the beam rotor. These shoulders, like I said, they're much more standardized now. They're just normal-ass shoulders. Rather than being, you know, a beam gun in one and, like, weird shapes. The antenna is different. Instead of having the more V-finny antenna, you have a singular antenna up the middle.
It's like a horn.
Which also adds one of the weirder victory tools that also are built into the feet. It has beam strings, which are, you know, basically... They're not beams, they just call them that, but they're basically like almost like the evolution of the heat rod. Electromagnetic wires.
Are you saying it's cables that you run electricity through?
Yes, they're just
check the box, Tomino's back.
Yep, Tomino's back. Yeah, it has beam strings, which are just basically upgraded heat rods.
Damn, he a robot and he got cables in the feet.
Big boy steppy.
Big boy swinging.
One new equipment it actually has is it has, instead of, like, it does have a normal beam saber as well. It also has a beam fan, which is kind of cool. It's basically
Is that the word you want to use? Cool.
Look, I like all the weird beam weapons. If it's not a saber, I tend to like it because I think sabers are boring as shit. So
beam strings are great. Beam fans are dumb.
What's wrong with it? It's just a look. It's like a semi shield. It's like you generated like a fifth of a beam shield.
Yeah. Either make a shield or make a sword. Commit to your purpose. This thing's worthless.
I get weird with it. I'm down.
Listen, I like the beam ribbon from G. You can do weird beam shit and it's good. It just
that's the one I don't like. So.
Ah, boo. I just need to understand why you would ever use it. I don't understand why you would ever use this.
Maybe you main Katara in Mortal Kombat. Like, you know.
Look. I mean, it's a pretty to be fair, compared to a beam saber, it's pretty beefy. It's very wide. And I mean...
Yeah, I guess so.
Let us not forget also, if you've ever built a model of the Victory... They even give the Victory the ability to do this sort of beam fan thing, which doesn't... We actually had a big talk about this in the Abnormal Mapping Discord back when it happened. We were like, wait, does this ever come up in the show, it using the beam saber as a fan? Why does every model kit give the Victory this, but not it's not actually ever used that way?
I always figured it was like the lighter tricks, where that was what it's supposed to be representative, but yeah, I guess so.
It's supposed to be, the way it gets described as a beam fan, it's supposed to be just like, oh, the beam saber can splay out wide, it just doesn't in animation.
I do appreciate that this one does get the strap. I'm glad that just the V1 and V2.
He wins the title? Oh, congratulations. Congratulations, your new heavyweight champion, the Rickshoku. He got the strap. He reached for the brass ring.
This eludes me.
It's a wrestling thing, don't worry about it.
I mean, it's also just a term for having a gun.
I guess it does just kind of have, instead of a beam rifle, it does just have little beam guns too.
It has two little pistols it can carry.
Nice. Just you know, I always love beam pistols because they either get shown and they are really useful, they're just as useful as a rifle, which makes you go, wait, why aren't they using more of these? Or they have to be shown and, like, just not do anything. And then it's like, well, what's the point?
I mean, akimbo pistols are a perennial favorite for me. And if you can evoke more John Woo stuff in your anime, why wouldn't you?
Beam doves.
That's the crossbone parrot.
Okay.
The Rikshokyu also has a special version, the version for Imperial Guard. What this version does is mainly it adds a new head camera. It actually has like a forehead camera added to the horn. And then you look at the shoulders and you go, oh, hey, they remembered that being off, like, you know, asymmetrical is pretty cool. And this one rules because I love the giant shield.
The giant shield is so good.
People that would know me from talking mecha on Twitter and stuff will realize, oh, wait, Dylan likes, I like shields. I think they're cool as shit. I like big metal shaped plates for blocking. It has this just big shoulder shield that is able to, you know, like rotate and move around and whatnot. And then on the other side,
Wait.
Oh.
We need to give the shield more attention.
I'm in agreement with Six. It is awesome that for display they made the Rikshokyu worse because it doesn't have the cool thing that is so revolutionary to all of Zanskar's suits. They give it a big showy shield, so it can look cool in photos.
And then they give it a beam shield on top of the shield.
look, if it
it's so cool.
It isn't useless because, look, okay.
I'm there's no sarcasm. I love it.
And I'm not saying, like, when I say useless, I do mean it as a term of affection. I think it's awesome.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
The problem is
it's so
evocative when you have
of
a beam shield.
Zanskar as a culture.
When you have a beam shield, you don't. To explain to the audience who may not know, a beam shield blocks everything. Because it is basically, you know, a beam saber that has been shaped into a shield, which means you're just, you know, hitting beam, which means bullets aren't going to pass through it, beams don't pass through it. So a giant physical shield like this at this point in time, not actually really useful, because, you know, a beam is still going to shoot through it. It can deflect probably like Gatling fire and such, but it's not going to deflect like a beam rifle. But don't worry, it also can just emit a beam shield on top of it. Which begs the question, wait, you already have tiny beam shield emitters, why do you... Look, it's cool, and as Billy said, it is very representative of Zanskar, because, as mentioned, this is for Imperial Guard.
It
is specifically
symbolic.
For, you know, the forces that are meant to be protecting Queen Maria. So... They need to look fancy. Six will like the other thing, though, I think, given that we just talked about it. It has a weird whip on its shoulder that is swung around using magnetic force. And I think it's basically just like a heat whip. That's all it really is. It's just a big metal whip that it has wrapped around its shoulder. It's pretty cool, though. It looks cool when it gets
used. The way
used.
It's wrapped around its shoulder, like, the way it's, like, it's... So its shoulder is just, like, a spike, and it wraps it around, and, like, the handle dangles down while it's stored. Mm-hmm. It looks so good.
It looks like you could really shoulder check somebody with that.
mm-hmm. And then, I think that's pretty much it for, like, the primary design differences. It has the two extra tools. But the thing is, they do a lot for the design.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it just, it elevates the Rikshokyu from being, oh, you made the Shokyu worse, to, this is alright, it's still not my favorite. Now, of course, my idea would just be, I'm gonna slap two of these giant, this giant shield on the Shokyu arm that's just the vernier, because why have imbalanced verniers when you can just have a big shield on the other arm, and imbalance it in a different way?
I feel like you just have, like, the Queen Manta at that point.
Oh no, what would we do?
Yeah, hold on a second. Yeah,
not that that's a complaint, just saying.
Yeah, good time.
And then I guess, so for one other Rikshokyu variant, we also have the Rikshokyu beam rotor equipment type. Which didn't. Couldn't the Rikshokyu already use a beam rotor?
Yeah.
It does. So I don't understand why this is specified in that way. Oh, I guess the beam rotor is not necessarily standard equipment on the rig Shoku, is supposed to be the idea.
I mean, there are images, like, there are images of the rig Shoku using the beam rotor, like, on Earth.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, it doesn't seem to be a common thing.
Yeah, so I guess this is just one that always has the beam rotor. Also has a weirder paint scheme that I think I like more, though. It's this weird green and green.
It's like the Zaku 3 a bit.
It looks like it looks like a future Gundam's version of the Zaku that I can't talk about.
Oh, I think I know what one you're speaking of, right.
Yeah, the colors are very reminiscent of that.
It almost reminds me a little bit of like a Transformer. Like this, I feel like I had a Megatron as a tank that kind of evoked these same colors at one point in my life.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, otherwise it's just the rig Shoku. It's a rig Shoku with special colors, and then the rest is always going to have the beam rotor.
One thing I'm surprised that Dylan hasn't shouted out is the fact that the rig Shoku has hard points.
It does have hard points. Okay, it's a thing I could shout out. The problem is, it's hard to shout them out because I don't feel like they really get effectively used. Like they have hard points, but the hard points are basically just, we put the equipment there, right? Like, we put the beam rifle there, or we put the
beam.
But
it's potential. It's potential.
It is potential.
It's limitless potential, Dylan.
You just attach the buster pack to it.
The thing is, we don't even get to see the Shoku's firing from the hard points like the Victory can, like with, you know, the Victory 1 with its leg hard points being able to shoot the beam rifle. You don't really get that with, like, the Shoku. But they do have all the Shokus. I believe even the original has, like, it's supposed to have equipment hardpoints.
Which makes a lot of sense if your primary, like, means of mobility takes up one of your arms 100% of the time.
Yeah. Surprised it doesn't dual-wield beam rotors. Just
that'd be
double
sick.
The flight. But yeah, and I think that would be all we have for the Shoku, which...
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm trying to think.
I mean, there's another machine we could talk about, but currently it has its own entry, so maybe we hold off.
Oh, well, would that be the Godzorla?
That would be the Godzorla.
Fun little fact. And I brought this up like way back, I think, in GGP when I had first discovered all of these. But Victory is one of those shows where we actually have a lot of the prototype art of, like, you know, early art of all of the various mobile suits, which is something I always value. I am always sad when a series don't have these.
I agree completely. That's one of the reasons why the new type 100% for this show is so good.
You can see in the image that I have linked, which others can see, I think it's, yeah, it's just on the wiki near the bottom, which is from that. You can see the evolution of the Shoku. Its original head was basically the Godzorla head. Which is kind of interesting, all things considered. Really interesting evolution for this mobile suit. Most of it is pretty similar throughout, like a lot of the shape. It's just minor adjustments. Like, it's always had, like, the asymmetry. I am sad that they got rid of the shoulder being a shield like that, though.
Yeah, it's very Rose Gundam to me.
Mm-hmm, it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that they didn't go with that one that doesn't have any of the ones that don't have any horn at all. It just looks like the Zolo.
Yeah, that's a bummer. Don't do that.
Those are really weird. The one that's getting me the most is the Godzorla one looking so organic.
Mm-hmm.
It
looks wet.
I think we should talk about the Godzorla because the problem is if we roll the Godzorla, that's going to be like a 10-minute, 15-minute episode.
That's true. Okay.
There's no other related suit.
Yeah.
Is that not a blessing as podcasters? Is that not a gift?
I am always trying to get Dylan to talk more on this show, so I don't think it's a blessing.
Okay, of course.
So the ZMT S13G Godzorla is another weird experimental suit used by Zanscare. It pops up pretty early, I believe, right? I'm trying to remember. It's like,
yeah, it is. It is like episode like 3 or 4 or something, like super suit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is that at the mass driver? I feel like that I have, for some reason, I associate it with that, even if that's not right. No, I don't think so.
I think it's before the mass driver. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's okay. Episode 5 is when it debuts. Right?
Yeah,
okay.
Definitely not.
Just trying to remember. It's like we all recently have watched the show, but at the same time, there's a lot of victory, so it's always hard to remember exactly when something popped up. The Godzorla, though. Looking at it, fucking weird machine also, doesn't actually really share any parts of the Shoku, even though it is, like, a descendant of it. Like, you can see elements of the idea there, right? Like, the chest has a similar design for, like, the cockpit hatch and stuff, even though it's not done the same way. And, like, you know, you've got two antenna on the head, but instead of eyes, you have this weird sort of dome.
What, like, if your entire head was one eye?
Just what if your head was all sensors? Yeah.
What if your eye was just vibes?
It has a beam rotor. It also has beam guns in its chest that are also its beam sabers, which I always like when they do. Like, basically, the two black parts at the edge of the chest pop down and have little guns in them, and then it can grab those guns and use them as sabers. Which is always rad as hell. I always just like built-in weapons anyway.
Yeah.
The thighs have missile launchers in them. That's what that giant. So this actually has the same thing where you have a crotch plate. You don't have like skirt armor, and the sides of the legs, the thighs look like they have skirt armor. But what that armor does is it opens up, and there's a whole ton of missiles in there. Which, you know, that's always fun. And then you've got your beam rifle, and it does have Vulcans. Speaking of what we talked about with the Shoku, wanted to make sure those were head Vulcans. Yep, those are Vulcans on the head.
There's some alternate design stuff that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. So, just going over the normal design, it's the way it gets used, it's basically just the enemy of the week before it gets destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a huge disservice, because I love the Godzorla. If I was going to pilot one mobile suit from Victory, I would do the Godzorla.
Yep. Oh, and the Godzorla also has the, similar to the Shoku, has like a weird integrated backpack. Incidentally, this backpack actually kind of reminds me of one of my favorite mobile suits ever. Reminds me a little of the Windwart's tail unit, which is kind of
cool. Oh, yeah. I can
well, now I don't like it anymore.
No.
Wow.
I'm kidding.
Wow. I'll have my day one day. The Godzorla is, like I said, it's hard to really talk about it other than its aesthetics, because it shows up, it does a couple of cool things, then it gets beaten and killed by the Victory. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's, and I don't think it ever shows up again. It's just, it's another experimental suit that, you know, it's a monster of the week, and it doesn't even have, like, a mass production version, really. I guess a way to think about it would be, it did bad enough that they didn't even bother mass producing it, as opposed to the Shoku, which they did bother.
Well, I mean, it kind of feels like it has the feel of one of those, like, you know, Zeon Armor of the Weeks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're like, oh, check it out. Here comes the fucking, you know, Brow Bro.
Look, the Brow Bro is a friend. Don't be rude.
Well, you're listen, right, if anything, I'm being rude to the Godzorla. Godzorla owns.
Yeah.
That first variant, though, I'm about.
Yep. So, again, if anyone listening wishes to go to the wiki, you can also see some of the earlier designs. And some of the earlier Godzorlas are incredibly rad. The very first version of it, actually, instead of having thighs, speaking of Advanced Zeta again, has subarms inside of the missile launchers, missile launchers are. Big, weird ones, yeah. Really large arms. I also love it has asymmetrical shoulders. It's got an asymmetrical chest. It's what a weird looking design. I'm kind of sad they didn't go with that.
It's got like its backpack. We can't see the back, but from the front, we can see it almost has like dragonfly wing style like backpack unit. It looks so good.
And the second one simplifies it greatly.
It really amplifies like the aesthetic of like I guess either like Kiriko's pants from Votoms or like you're wearing cargo shorts, but like if you're gonna give him those bulgy thighs, put some arms in those bad boys.
Yeah, just give it some arms. Then you have the second and third designs, which much more toned down. The third one has a really interesting head. I don't know why that head is familiar to me.
I mean, it looks like a combination of like the Shoku and Sonic the Hedgehog,
or like a Pat Labor, or like an Ingram.
Well, you know what? I think also though, like, I think some of Ishigaki's earlier victory, I think he just used this head a lot, and it never got used on any final design, like that big rabbit eary head. Because I swear I've seen this used on.
Oh, sorry, I was looking at the other one. I was looking at number.
Oh,
two.
Yeah, no, the second one is very. It's normal. It's fine. But, yeah, again, really cool to have this art.
Yeah, there's some notation on this, like, design that, on those shoulders are hard points, your favorite. So you could, you know, theoretically get some beam guns or missiles or stuff mounted on those, which is pretty sick.
Yeah, so, it's really interesting, because Victory has a lot of that for something that both didn't get that many models, all things considered at the time, and also for them just not really utilizing that in the show a lot. But there's a lot of, like, detail drawn on a lot of Victory designs that, like, doesn't necessarily get used, really.
I mean, Victory hasn't have the biggest, like, the best reputation among the Gundam fandom, which is a bummer. It's great. But I feel like it's a case of the people making the show were having a much better time than it turned out the people watching the show were.
Yeah.
That is unfortunately due to some of those there's a translator on Twitter, I do not remember their ad off the top of my head, talks a little bit in the book about Turn of Gundam. They talk about the depression of Tamino during this, and doesn't sound like anybody on Victory was having a good time, unfortunately.
Oh.
The other Victory thing that's really interesting to me, so I linked you all some early Vespa mobile suits by Ishigaki. A lot of these were designed really early.
Hmm.
Like, the thing is, Ishigaki actually, like, labels his art with dates on it, usually. If you look at that first image I sent, look at the right. That's almost that's more than a year before Victory came out. Mm-hmm. It's March 1992. Which is interesting to me. I'm curious. Like, I know that some of the books I also have, like, dates on the illustrations. And it's really interesting because a lot of Victory designs were, like, done, you know, months and months in advance. Like, you know, the order that they appeared in the show, I think, even, doesn't always match up. Because I think, like, the Gotchrotladen, like, the Kantio and stuff, which are near the end, like, more near the end of the show, had relatively early art as well. It's really interesting to me.
These are the ones you just sent us are like a full year before it even aired.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wonder if it's a situation where, like, I mean, I feel like it's not usually the case. Usually it's like, okay, this is the premise of our show. Let's draw some robots for it. And also I've got some designs around. But maybe this was very much a show where it was, like, driven in large part by a bunch of designs that people wanted to put in a show.
I don't know for sure. Like, then again, Ishigaki always seems to, because he labels his design. See, this is a problem, right? We don't always know the dates on a lot of designs, and unfortunately a lot of mechanical designers don't always date their sketches. Mm-hmm. Ishigaki has always been really good about it. Because I noticed, like, even on things like the Xenogears designs he's done, there were also done, like, in, like, I think, like, 96, like, 2 years in advance before Xenogears was even out. Mm-hmm. You got, like, the Heimdall is, like, one of the earliest Xenogears designs, and it was, like, a 1996 design, I believe. And so I always have to wonder, like, how early these design elements are made versus the show. It's just, I don't know. It's something that it would be very interesting to me to find out more about that, like, with other designers like Okawara and, like, you know, other Gundam shows.
I know there was a great deal of studio pressure on introducing designs. Apparently that's where the Motorod fleet came from, was pressure from studio heads to add more battleships. And Tomito maliciously complying by making them, you know, Again, I say they're absurd. But I still give them my full endorsement. The Motorrad fleet, with their big motorcycle Duker Eek vibes.
Yeah, that's like I said. It's always interesting to try to figure out production stuff on Gundam stuff because you know earlier shows the things you would think would be more merchandise driven, right? Are things where you find out they had a lot more freedom than you would think, and then you hear this stuff about Victory. But then you look at, like, Victory, and Victory doesn't even have, like, a lot of merch, right? So you get this, like, weird thing where, like, some of the most, like, merch and, like, corporate-driven shows end up having, like, some of the least amount of, like, stuff available, which is just kind of an interesting, like, coincidence to me. Because, like, G Gundam's a good example of that, too. You know, G Gundam, everything is designed in a way that's super toyetic, right?
Yeah.
But everyone, like, outside of the Shuffle and, like, Master Asia and the Nobel, you don't really get very much at all from it. Like, you just get, like, the main, you get, like, the main five Gundams, basically, and then, you know, the God Gundam upgrade. And then, outside of that, like, you get the Master, because that's, like, the rival, and that's about it. Which isn't very much, all things considered. You know, you look at, like, even, like, First Gundam and, like, Zeta and stuff, and you get, like, every freaking design under the sun will get a release. Unless it takes forever, like poor Jared's suits with the beer lint and the Yvonne Doc being recent. But, you know, like I said, just with Victory, like, you know, Victory, like, I look at, like, you know, the model kits and stuff, and they also have some weird choices here, too, but it's not like it was, like, a super heavy merchandise show, and I'm curious, like, did they just get really heavy involvement because the ratings were low, or... it's just something I wonder about, you know?
Mm. Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a very, like, you, I mean, do you think that, like, the creators resent being, like, made to shill toys, even though, you know, that's, unfortunately, that's capitalism.
Yeah. Well, and I, the thing is, to be fair, a lot of times I don't think they usually do, right? Like, maybe the director does. A lot of mechanical designers, I'm sure, enjoy doing what they do, because... I feel like that's how you have to get into mechanical design, is loving what you do. Like, for all, like, the talk about, like, subverting mecha expectations, you know, you have things like 0080 and stuff, which can be very, like, anti-mobile suit, right? I can guarantee, though, Izubuchi fucking loved making a camper. he really enjoyed making his own original Zeon mobile suit.
Oh, yeah,
for the 1 year war.
Here's the thing about that expression, having your cake and eat it. You would need to possess a cake in order to eat it. So, in fact, it's fine to have your cake and eat it.
But, yeah, like, so, like I said, Victory designs, though, are just always something really interesting to me because of, like, how early some of them were made, and yet how much I know also the designers kind of, or not the designers, but, like, the director Tomino and stuff, they were pushed to have certain elements as the show was airing. I mean, hell, we already know about the chaos of the first couple of episodes, right? Because, we need a Gundam in the first episode, so we have to kind of tell these events in, like, a weird order now. It's just, it's interesting. Out of curiosity, since you translated the novel, when did the novel come out originally? Do you know?
I've looked at these dates. The first book actually came out, like, a few days, like, a couple, maybe a week or two before the show actually aired, the first one. I don't know what the full release schedule of them was, but it was pretty concurrent with the show.
That's really interesting. That makes sense, though, too, right? Because I know that, like, you know, there's that famous interview of Tomino talking to Anno about Victory. And, you know, Anno, I believe that happened before, you know, Ava and stuff. So, like, it had to be, like, right after Victory ended. And he talks about, like, the novel, elements of the novel there, too. Which is really interesting to me because, like, I wonder if it would... Once it's complete, it's going to be interesting to contrast, like, the novel versus the show, because if they were written near concurrently, it's like, I wonder if the novel maybe has a more accurate picture of what Tomino wanted.
I try not to get too tied up in my own headcanon of editorializing that, because there are a lot of things that crop up in the novel that are kind of made explicit. That, like, you know, for example, you know, Uso and crew cruise around on Wappa, which, you know, come from everyone's favorite first Gundam episode, Time Be Still. Stuff like that. There's like there's a line about how Uso's dad has a like a third generation, which would be what, Neo Zeon era mobile suit reactor that he tried to power Casarelia with at one point, but gave up on that. There's
that's pretty funny.
Very early in book two, Shakti has like kind of an imagined almost straw man conversation with Marbit in her head, where she talks about evoking the imagery of the Gundam in Amuro specifically. So there is like the one thing that I would say really kind of comes through in the books is that there really is meant to be a sense of continuity between Victory and all the prior stuff. There's a lot of allusions to like the Crossbone Vanguard. There is just a whole lot there that feels like someone was like, look, Tamino, it's been, you know, what, Double Zeta was 88, so it's been, you know, 7 years like since the last full, you know, Gundam series aired on television. You can't just tie it into your work this directly. And he's like, well, I'll write my own book with other
Blackjack
stuff.
And hookers.
I was going to go there, but I didn't want to.
No, I could hear it.
Yeah, like it's this is the kind of thing that makes me want to be able to read more of his novels too, right? Because he does novels of fucking everything.
He does do Tamino, novels of everything.
Tamino, I would say, honestly, like, you know, you look at his, like, the amount of novels he makes, the guy makes more novels than he ever makes anime, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and he makes novels of everything. You've got the weird through line for, like, Dunbine, where it's, like, Wings of Rain, and then they told him, oh, you can put Bison Wall in a show, but it has to be a mecha show, so he makes Dunbine. And then he makes novels of Dunbine, where I believe those novels are seen as like a future version of Bison Well versus what Wings of Rain was. It's so weird though. And then, you know, the whole pipeline of High Streamer to Shars Counterattack, the anime, to Beltorchica's Children, the novel again.
Mm-hmm. Simultaneously, you know, writing Gaia Gear and Hathaway's Flash. And then I think he did the Adeon mm-hmm. novels at the same time as those.
Yeah. Like the man just, he writes a lot. And unfortunately, you know, they don't really get translated.
Well, you know, Dylan, I'm doing my part.
Yes, you know,
Starship Troopers, I'm saluting.
Like, well, that's the thing, though. Like, there's only, like, it's really good that you're translating it. It's sad that there just isn't more, like, general interest enough for people to, like, you know, a lot more people to translate it. Because, you know, it's a lot of work to just translate, you know, even these, I believe, on your own.
I think it's one of those things where we see it very evidently in people who are like, who ask, and this is, I don't mean to come down on people who like dubs. Dubs are wonderful and accessibility is great, but like, where can I watch Victory Gundam in a way I don't have to read? I think Gundam fans hate reading.
You know,
this is my podcast. It is Dylan's podcast, but in some ways it is my podcast, and I am putting my foot. This is a subs, not dubs house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that's how I live and die too, but
don't worry, you'll also get people asking you how they can watch Victory Gundam legally now, and it's like, good luck.
You never could.
I just had that on my mind because of a conversation I had earlier. And I was thinking about like how GGP this season is going to be inundated with people asking, where can I watch Gundam X legally? And it's like, no.
Japan.
Yeah, go to Japan and grab a streaming service there, I guess, or maybe a VPN.
Get a VPN and Japanese Netflix.
Yeah, like, it's just, you can't. But yeah, and it just, the reason it sucks with Gundam, right? And I'm sorry, I know we've gone far beyond, like, the mechanical talk, but we have a guest who is related to this, so it's important. So welcome to, us rambling about Gundam in translation. But, you know, you've got a couple of distinct groups. You have, like, you know, Zeonic, probably, like, one of the most famous scanlation groups, you know, doing like scanlations of various manga and such. And then you've got like, that's it though. That's actually it. Besides like our good friend Billy here.
I would like to take a chance to shout out my like a fellow translator at the Ideon, like THEIDEON on Twitter, who is doing the Gunbuster novels, but also over Christmas did the this prelude to 0080 about Chris, written by the scenario writer who also did Gunbuster, it turns out. But like talking about AI, raising the AI of mobile suits, it's weird and kind of maternal, like a little gender essentialist, as I know we often have a problem with in Gundam, but it is kind of a fun little exploration and expansion of that world, kind of a little bit of an alternate take of some of what we get in Sentinel with like the instructor corps,
speaking of gender essentialism,
beating the like the processes of how to do things into mobile suit AI.
I like Sentinel a lot in theory, and I like a lot of his mobile suit stuff. The story itself, though,
it's so dry. It is nothing without the photo component, and I like
the photo component makes it really cool. Is the thing
I would agree with that.
But yeah, like Gundam is a huge franchise. For Bandai, for, you know, like, in general. Like, it is one of their top money makers. It is something that is just big. Like, even beyond just, like, having, like, fans, you know, like us who sit around and discuss this stuff all day. Or, you know, GGP. It's really big, and that's why it's so weird to me that you just cannot... Finding supplementary information that is translated well is very difficult. I mean, hell, most Gundam fans don't watch a lot of Gundam, is the thing, too. As you mentioned, you know, both... you mentioned Gundam fans not knowing how to read. There's also a lot of Gundam fans that also...
I said Gundam fans don't like to read. It's a big distinction.
Well, okay. I should say, they don't know necessarily... They don't always have the comprehension necessary also to really understand what's always going on with, like, some series, right? Which is where you get, like, really weird ideas and takes about Gundam. Like, it's not even really different, just where people are outright wrong. But it's not always their fault, because sometimes they also just get it from, like, years of these badly translated sources, you know? We complain about the wiki a lot on here. The wiki has things, times where we look at stuff and we're just like, oh, this is wrong. Like, this is visibly wrong. And besides the wiki, though, and all that, like, you know, you just get all this, like, old information that has been compiled that is incorrect and then like aggregated to places, and then more people read that, which results in more people being like having these weird reads.
Mm-hmm. It it's an issue sucks. It's an issue of like someone machine translated something 10 years ago and then cherry picked the stuff they liked, and then someone cherry picked from that, so it just kind of snowballs into
translators changing the tone is another one I've noticed, right? Like where people, you know, we'll take, like, a tweet by someone who worked on a show. You have this with, like, the seed director. Or, like, they'll take, like, an interview that was done, and they will alter the tone to make the person seem a lot more malicious than they were. You know, like, I've seen it brought up, like, the seed director complaining about the way his work was adapted in a video game. But then you look at the actual tweet, and it's more of a, he's just kind of exacerbated, like, he's exhausted by people asking him about it constantly rather than him saying it's bad. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. There's all these like little things, but like the way people have translated them, they've misrepresented the way that these things are. And it really sucks with a franchise as large as Gundam, with as much depth as Gundam can have, to have all of these bad sources, you know? And that's why I am glad I personally know someone who's translating a Gundam novel, because I will say... Generally speaking, I don't necessarily trust a lot of Gundam fans translating stuff to not... I mean, everyone's going to let their biases show, right? But there are times where, like, there are just certain Gundam fans where there are some people that I would know that would do a translation of Hathaway's Flash, for instance, that I don't think I would trust doing Hathaway's Flash, just knowing what I know of that novel. You know what I mean? There are just certain elements that I just... just sucks. Just wish we had more and better translations in general with Gundam, and that we had less perpetration of, like, just weird, wonky ideas that have been brought up by, you know, these translations. I'm glad there's, like, a lot of people that will be listening to this, a lot of this won't apply to you even, because the thing is, I have seemed to run into a lot of newer fans who are a lot cooler about this. As someone who's been involved with Gundam for 11 or so years now, and have had my own periods of having, like, dumb ideas about it, and, like, being ingratiated in the fandom, and, like, letting that alter my perception because, oh, all these people who, you know, say this in this group, you know, they're all saying it, so that must mean that's the right way to read it instead of what I feel. Stuff like that. Where I've just realized a lot of Gundam fans are wrong about stuff. A lot of the old fandom. And it's just, I don't know. Anyway, sorry for all the navel gazing. just, you know, thinking about it, because we have a translator on here, who has done a book that I'm very excited to read, especially now that it's all compiled, because I am much more likely to read a book when it is all together than
took a special effort to make sure I had it in, like, Kindle compatible, well, and formatted properly, like, ebook, so people, like, to make it just as easy and pleasurable as possible for people to read.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk off the air about our business arrangement. You know, since we got this Gundam translator here, a Frozen Teardrop could really use.
That's 13 books,
and they're terrible.
Do you ever think about how poor Zionic started on that, and then you know, stopped because he couldn't stand the story?
And you know what else? You know what else happened is if you try and find the ones that he did do, all the torrents have nobody proceeding it.
Well, of course
nobody,
they don't.
Nobody wants to share it.
All right. I think we have gone through the show queue, and we have also gone through a good, like, 30-minute ramble on, you know, side Gundam stuff. Me being just kind of having this weird feeling, though, about this. And I'm, like I said, glad that we have Victory. I mean, I'm glad we're getting an anime adaptation of Hathaway. I really still want to read those novels, though. Same with Gaia Gear 2. And then I found out, you know, you learn things like, oh, look, someone translated the radio drama of Gaia Gear, and I'm like, that's really cool. Then I find out the radio drama is missing, like, a ton of the content of the novels, and it's like, oh, well, now I just want to read the novels.
I'm not promising anything at this time.
Oh, I know.
Because Victory, obviously, is going to take up a few more years of my life.
Yes.
But Gaia Gear is on my short list of follow-up projects for after Victory, if I like maybe if I decide to do, like, Beltorchica's Children, just so I can have, like, a one and done. But anyways, there will the rest assured, as long as the feds don't come a knock, and Lagrange Point Press will continue to be putting out quality content at the price you love.
And I'm glad for that. I am very appreciative of that. Not to mention, I have a friend now who I can simply go, hey, wait, I can't read this thing real quick, or I'm getting a wonky translation. Let me message Billy real quick and see if he'll... Don't do this to him. Don't do this to your translator friends. I just do it because I know I can get away with it. But don't do this. I have so many books, though. I have so many Japanese books.
With Dylan, it's professional courtesy. For everyone else, I'll send you my PayPal.
All right. Well, I would say that was a pretty fun episode. I hope you had fun with us, Billy. And
I absolutely did.
Where can people find you online? I'm sorry to steal the second from you, Six. I'm just in a hyperactive mood now.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at Lagrange_press, or you can find just get the website link that I've just bought the other day, which is Lagrangepoint.press, which just links at the moment directly to the Twitter, but hopefully eventually will be some sort of actual website.
Nice. Six, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at SixDetmar, SixDetmar. And ScanlandMedia.com, Patreon.com/ScanlandMedia.
I was going to say, where can people find your podcast?
Yeah.
And then you can find me at LowPolyRobot. I am on Twitter as... God, I said that backwards! You can find me on Twitter as LowPolyRobot, at LowPolyRobot. Look, I... I got weird sleep last night. I got mostly good sleep, but I am suddenly in a very hyperactive mood. I'm actually very happy about the end of this talk, so I feel bad ending the podcast here, but, you know, we're at an hour and 10 minutes, so I was like, we're not even talking about the show queue anymore.
Honestly, I'm glad I don't really view it as a real Mechanista episode if you don't break an hour, so.
Oh, fair enough. I remember when me and Six started this, and we talked to each other, and we're like, yeah, it's going to be great little 10-15-minute episodes, you know? It's going to be wonderful. We're just going to have this short little snack of a podcast, and now we instead serve like a full course dinner, and then when people say, no, please, I'm full, we're like, but we haven't finished talking about dessert yet. That is my very stretched analogy. Anyway, until next time, folks.
Don't you feel a bit sad when winter comes?
ディフェンスでもいいよ君が僕を詰め続けてく